present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Yorkshire Post read by Brian Perkins.
Hatchet-wielding Geoffrey Allen McLeod, 29, who held up a filling station in Tampa, Florida, forgot to fill up his fuel tank and was arrested when his car ran dry.
Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Wheen and Andy Kershaw. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Steve Punt. And before we start round one, here's a TV listing from The Independent.
BBC One, 9 o'clock. News, 9:55, party election broadcast by the Conservative Party. 10 o'clock, they think it's all over.
Thanks to Peter Forster of South London for that. Francis, who made a public U-turn privately?
I think this must be Tony Blair. I don't know if maybe it's coming up later on, I don't know, but scientists this week have developed a new bullet which can change direction in midair, and this is what Blair is now doing. He goes screaming towards the target and then discovers that it's moved a bit, or David Dimbleby has asked him an awkward question, and then goes lurching on in the other direction. So the poor saps in the shadow cabinet, thinking they're doing their loyal duty, stand up and say, no, we have no intentions whatsoever of privatising air traffic control. And in fact, it would be an outrage. Our air is not for sale, I think, were their exact words. And then Blair pops up and says, well, actually, I think it might not be such a bad idea. And this is happening every day now. Every few seconds, because traditionally, Labour governments used to wait until they were elected before ditching all their manifesto commitments. But Blair has obviously decided it would save time if he got all that over with before the 1st of May, so that's what he's doing.
Andy, welcome to the news quiz. What highland will be free but still paid for?
Is this something to do with the return of Sean Connery to Scotland if there is an independent Scotland in the event of a victory by the Scottish Nationalists?
It is.
And they've pledged to create 100,000 new jobs, 700 new teaching posts, ban handguns and then invite back James Bond.
Absolutely right. This was the Scottish Nationalists who announced at their manifesto launch that free Scots would pay their own way. And when the St. John's Ambulance Brigade had treated the mass fainting fit, they promised legal recognition for the Gaelic and Scots languages, even though we know there are only three words in Scots, which are see, you and Jimmy. They were supported by movie star Sean Connery, who spoke from his traditional wee Highland croft on the banks of the Burn just outside Puerto Banús in Spain. Steve, who changed his speech in a great liberal tradition?
Ah, yes, this will be the third force in British politics, the Liberal Democrats, a party who suffer from a name that is bizarrely tautologous. I don't know about you, but I generally assume that if one is liberal, then the fact that you're also a Democrat kind of goes with the territory. I don't know whether the liberal dictators exist anywhere in the world. Not sure. Normally, the thing about the Lib Dems is that everybody says, oh, the thing about them is we don't really know what they stand for. But this particular election, they're about the only party where we do know what they stand for. They're the only party who, when they get the market research that says, oh, 90% of the public say that they'd be quite happy to pay more income tax if they knew where it was going. They're the only party that actually believe them. Paddy Ashdown changed a speech this week because he was going to slag off Blair and Major in it, and then he saw a piece of market research that said, oh, 90% of the public thought the chicken was a silly gimmick and they're fed up with people slagging each other off and we want the issues discussed. So he thought, oops, and rewrote his speech to say, isn't it terrible how people just slag each other off in elections? And I'm not going to do that. Oh, no, I think.
Paddy Ashdown cut a passage from his speech which contained a personal attack on Tony Blair. He stressed there was no place in the Liberal Democratic Party for silly names such as Prime Minister or even Leader of the Opposition. He refused to dirty his hands with the nitty-gritty of electioneering. He tried that last time and it didn't get him anywhere. Alan, listen to this. Alan, for whom did a bell not toll?
It is wonderful. First round of the news quiz is always political. But it never gets to me, because under the Representation of the People Act, there's the three main parties, and there isn't a fourth one.
There is now.
But there is now, yes. Not that he represents any people, he's just... But he's going to become it. It's very strange, really. They not liking the Conservative candidate that they have to face and wanting to unseat Neil Hamilton, Labour Party have pulled out their man. They're obviously rather worried that he's not clean enough. They want to put in a clean man. It's a very strange admission, saying, well, our bloke can't possibly handle Neil Hamilton. Our bloke gets everything in a brown envelope and has his hands on nurses' knees, so we're going to put in this man who knows nothing, but he has been shot in Bosnia and he'll be a great help to us. And I suppose it will now sweep the country. I'm no doubt down in Cricker will be getting Anthea Turner. Or if the money runs to it, Mother Teresa will start.
But they have got Coronation Street on the other side, haven't they? It's a very serious campaign, because Bell, when he was attacked in a field by the... Neil and that rather terrifying Christine, brought in his chum from Bosnia, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Stewart, and John Stalker, the old policeman. And then by way of retaliation, Neil Hamilton appeared with poor old Ken Barlow from Coronation.
This was Neil Hamilton, who survived as Tory candidate for Tatton, despite the cash for questions and free nights in a hotel row. The Labour and Liberal parties agreed to replace their candidates with Martin Bell, who, as a TV journalist, stays in hotels free while being paid to ask questions. He was unfortunate enough to be accosted by Mrs. Hamilton, known at top Paris hotel reception desks as the undiplomatic bag. And the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Andy 4, Alan and Steve 4. And we start round two with an advert spotted in the Nottingham Evening Post.
Invalid electric scooter has new and only used once. Owner died, needs new battery.
Thank you, Stella Bush of Calvert and Knotts, for sending us that. Francis, whose recovery proved Guinness was good for him?
Ernest Saunders.
Yes.
We must tread carefully here. He's not standing for election, but he does have lawyers. I think that job is already taken in Tatton. There are other constituencies looking for a pro-sleaze candidate. This is Jailbird, former Jailbird, convicted fraudster, criminal. We're allowed to say all this, aren't we? Ernest Saunders. What we're not allowed to say, according to his lawyers, is that he ever claimed to have Alzheimer's. They say no. He said he had pre-senile dementia, which is quite different. And he's recovered from it miraculously and is now earning £500,000 a year or something as a an international capitalist of some type, working for a bank or Swiss bank, is it? But the pre-senile dementia, although it's in abeyance, can come back at any moment. Far be it from me to hope that it rears its head in the middle of a board meeting when he's about to take a crucial decision, but... there is always that danger with Ernest Saunders.
Brought on by the tremendous pain of having your hand caught in the till.
Andy, who missed the story of an early morning glory?
Oh, the press.
Hmm.
When Patsy Kensit married the second or third rock star that she's got hitched to, and married... one of the Gallagher brothers. I looked to Francis for advice on popular music.
You don't know about this.
I don't know. about these things. Liam, I think it was.
The chap, yes.
And they managed to get married without the attentions of the tabloid media.
Even though the Sun was booked into a room in the same hotel, rather mysteriously. The Sun newspaper, that is. Not Liam, not Patsy's son, who was... Patsy Kensit's son was absent from this wedding, her four-year-old son, James. Little detail. I'm very well informed about pop music, unlike my colleague here. He was up in Scotland with his father, who's called Jim Kerr, lead singer of the aptly named Simple Minds.
Married him.
She married him, yeah. She married lots of people in her time. And in a year or two, when Oasis start falling from grace, who can tell? She might marry a Spice Girl in due course, I suppose.
In keeping with Oasis's general relationship with the Beatles, he got married at the same registry office as Paul McCartney.
Absolutely, yes, which has caused consternation to brother Noel, who thinks he now has to marry Yoko Ono. Steve, listen to this. Stressed the stress of life on the hoof.
Yes, this is a deer hunter story, isn't it? They worked out that deer are very stressed when they're being hunted, amazingly. I'd got this slightly wrong because I remember the story was in the news a while ago, and I just saw the headline. It says deer stressed while hunted, and I thought, well, that's a bit odd, because I thought the whole point about hunting deer was that you stalked them. And the you sort of crept up on it with your rifle, and the deer didn't know anything about it until it was too late. So I thought, well, if they're stressed by that, they must be much more sophisticated creatures than we realise. Yeah, the word's obviously gone round the deer community somehow. I thought, well, it's not just standing around in forests. There's this constant fear of snipers. It's just... But it turns out, because amazingly, I don't know that much about deer hunting, it turns out that there is a totally different type of deer hunting, which consists of chasing the deer with a large pack of dogs that are trained to tear it to pieces, and then people come up and shoot it. And surprisingly, that does rather stress the deer out while they're charging through the forest trying not to be killed. But I think now what's going to happen is that it's going to be banned on National Trust property, which means that the deer presumably hover about 10 yards from the border with some National Trust property. When they hear the horn, they hove over their 10 yards and go, ha, 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 ha.
The report found that deer react to stressful situations much as human beings do. The deer immediately take fright at the first sight of red coats, an experience familiar to anyone who's ever had a holiday at Butlins. Supporters of the hunt say it's just a harmless country sport, and at least it keeps the landed gentry away from the House of Lords, where they could do serious damage. Alan, who has gone Vorsprung über alles?
Oh, yes. This is another survey by people who didn't really have to do the survey to know that the Germans like travelling in Europe. They like going to Austria. After that, they like going to the Sudetenland. After a bit, they say, why don't we try Czechoslovakia? And Poland's rather nice this time of year. Oh, I don't know, I'd rather. Let's have a go at France. There it is. As Lord Grey famously said, the towels are going out all over Europe. We shall not see them hauled up again in our lifetime. No, they've discovered that the krauts get everywhere, and they've done research to find this. I don't know what sort of research. I hope it involves shooting things other than deer, but no, it's what they do. They travel more than other people. If you consider them people, that is. So cut that out of the editing. Yes, I am a bit Eurosceptic. Well, I'm sort of... never mind Europe, I'm a bit krautsceptic one way or another.
It is the news that the Germans are the most widely travelled nation in the world. Their most popular destination is now France, where a coachload of OAPs were recently given the fright of their lives. They happened upon a Renault advert being filmed, but when a woman cried out, Papa! 2 dozen old soldiers immediately denied ever meeting her mother. And the scores at the end of round two are Francis and Andy 8, Alan and Steve 8. We start round three with a cutting from The Guardian.
A flasher who, for 16 years, exposed himself to women on the London Underground was spared a jail sentence yesterday after an Old Bailey judge was told his wife would stand by him.
Thank you, Mrs. P. Samuel of Poole, for sending that in. Francis, where was the A10 clouded in mystery?
My colleague here seems to know about this, as it's not about rock music.
He's a Captain Button.
It is.
Of the US Air Force. Disappeared in a fighter jet.
Well, by the time of the repeat, he may have reappeared, of course. He may have just been trying to get away from the election.
And he's disappeared over something called Superstition Valley, carrying 400 or 500-pound bombs on his aeroplane. And I heard his dad on the radio last night saying he's no idea what he's up to. and neither has the US Air Force.
This is the mysterious disappearance of an American Air Force A-10 attack craft Thunderbolt Warthog tank buster. Possibly someone stenciled its name on the side and the weight of the paint brought it down. Possibly Captain Craig Button was not very good at navigation, in which case they may care to look out for him on Channel 5. That's where all the rubbish pilots end up these days. Andy, listen to this.
I love coffee, I love tea, I love the jabba jabbing, it loves me. Coffee and tea and the jabba and me, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup.
Andy, who knocked down pick-me-ups?
I think it was the Consumer Association that said that these herbal energy drinks, I think, were no better for you than a cup of tea. Yeah. Unless you were the recipient of the cup of tea with rat poison in it, which somebody was giving to the wife earlier this week.
Allegedly. The other stuff is called Aqua Libra, which seems to mean free water, as I understand it. And it's neither free nor any water, because it's full of all these things like... not ganja, what's that stuff called?
You've been to North Korea, ginseng.
And ginseng, and bark from trees. And Witch magazine says that bark from trees isn't actually that good for you. Surprise, surprise. And sort of grass clippings and hedge cuttings and things. And it's doesn't do any good. But and it's no better than a cup of tea, because if you have a cup of Lapsang Souchong, you get the hedge clippings anyway, not to mention a few old bits of leftover Guy Fawkes bonfire thrown in, you know.
This is the claim by Witch magazine that herbal drinks are unlikely to have any significant beneficial effect. Witch claimed it was ridiculous to pay for drinks with interesting, exotic-sounding ingredients, such as ginseng and prickly ash bark, when you can drink ordinary tap water and get the equally exotic-sounding cryptosporidium for nothing. The drinks are intended as an alternative to alcohol, rather like Australian lager. Steve, which ex-reg clocked up 50 in style?
Ah... yes. Elton John was 50. All the papers had a picture of him going to his birthday party in this ridiculous outfit and a very silly wig, which is a bit odd because you'd think for his birthday party he'd want to wear something a bit different. And it was a ludicrous outfit, it has to be said. The first Elton John song I really remember when I was a kid was called Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. And I looked at that picture and thought, if you go out dressed like that, it's not really surprising. He had a sort of huge periwig with a little galleon on top that actually fired real gunpowder. And but because it was a story that wasn't about the election, the papers were very, very big on it. There was lots of photographs of people arriving there in fancy dress. And the biggest thing was that they all seemed to be very surprised that Andrew Lloyd Webber's wife has legs. There's all, she turned up in this outfit that showed, and all these papers kind of say, oh, look, his wife's got legs. As if somebody who looks like Andrew Lloyd Webber would have had to have married a Dalek or something.
This was Elton John's 50th birthday bash. Among those present was Andrew Lloyd Webber, who turned up in a football strip, which everyone thought was very original. First time he's ever been accused of that. And the scores at the end of round three are Francis and Andy 12, Alan and Steve 12 points. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Yorkshire Post.
Mr. Fuller and Mr. Gummerson both admitted on-off relationships with Miss Lynn Costello, coordinator of Harrogate Dial-A-Ride.
Thanks to all of you who sent us that. Francis, listen to this.
I got married to the widow next door. She's been married 7 times before. Well, everyone was an enery. She wouldn't have a willy of a slam. I'm a rightful man named Enery. Enery the 8-4-M.
Francis, who apparently preferred fish to chicken in a basket?
It seems that a monarch of this country once had fish for dinner. It's been discovered a good many hundred years later, but this is apparently now sort of a fact. They found in the Tower of London, in a moat, they found an old basket, and beside it there were a couple of fish bones. And on the strength of this, they decided it must have been Henry VIII. I mean, why this proves it was Henry VIII's fishing basket, I don't know. And why... you'd have to fish in the Thames. You don't get carp in the Thames, do you? Perhaps you did in those days.
This is the wicker basket pulled out of the moat at the Tower of London, which it's claimed was used to catch Henry VIII fish suppers. It's well documented that Henry was keen on fish and encouraged all his wives to nibble on the tasty codpiece. One evening, Henry sat down to dine with his bride and ordered someone to take the head off the trout. And with one simple... Andy, which Roy is making a Rovers return?
Dante snores about football.
It's Roy the Rovers. Rovers is back. Roy Hattersley, standing down from Parliament, has returned in his old guise as the footballing hero of many a boy's comic over the years. Poor old Roy the Rovers, he keeps being killed off by the comics that employ him because they realise there's no future in him. And a couple of years ago, they thought they'd done him in by having his legs amputated, I think. He was blown up by terrorists. So he's now in a wheelchair, but he's become football manager. And he was packed off to manage, I think, some Russian team. And then another comic took him up and gave him a drink problem just to ease
the life of it. And he wasn't married to any pop stars.
And he's now been revived yet again.
This is the news that Roy of the Rovers is back and starring in the BBC's Match of the Day magazine, though, of course, they can only show edited highlights of his adventures. If you want the full story, you have to subscribe to Sky Sports magazine. He wants to save Britain's most famous comic team from humiliation, but Brian Mawinney insists they don't need him. Steve, how might foreplay become a trip to the chemist?
Oh, terrific. There are some stories where you read them and you think, now, I think that the Spanish Inquisition had the right idea about scientists. And this was one of them. These sort of ubiquitous researchers have done some research and they've isolated the chemical that produces the female orgasm. I mean, how they researched it, I do not know. Usually they do these sorts of research with mice.
No, it's rats, this one.
Rats?
Yeah. Worked on rats, apparently. That woman, Whipple, who did it, who discovered the G-spot, tried it out on rats, and it worked. I mean, how does she know that these rats are having orgasms? But she did. And she deduces from that that rats have the same sort of sexual tastes as humans, and therefore it will work on humans. Even though, I mean, you never see rats in bondage gear. I think they're more easily pleased than we are, quite honestly.
No, it's just extraordinary, because they've isolated this chemical, so that the news angle on it was that now they've got the chemical, they can theoretically produce a pill so that you could just swallow this pill and have an orgasm. And I find this extraordinarily worrying, because once they've isolated this chemical and it's sitting there in a laboratory in a jar, there it is, and that means people can break in and steal it. And the idea of a group of terrorists with a vial of this chemical... I mean, they can go around, they can just drop it into people's tea while they're not looking. And it's, you know, it's a whole new meaning to the phrase, you only get an ooh with Thai food.
Do you think, for people who don't like medication, there'll be a fake orgasm pill?
The news that scientists may be on the verge of developing an orgasm pill for women. The pill needs 30 minutes to take effect, so women who want to orgasm simultaneously with their partners need to take it 29 and a half minutes before. Now that cloning means males are unnecessary in procreation, the new pill is another advance for women who don't object to men being present at the birth of their children, just don't want them there at the conception. Alan, what went mobile in the night thanks to mobiles?
Do these beds?
Yes.
Ah, it's a couple called Watts. And at about 3 a.m, Mr. Watts, presumably his wife having taken an orgasm pill, found himself thrown across the room, looking around like a ping-pong ball. Crept back into bed, happened again, swatted him onto the ceiling. And he thought, my marriage has taken a turn for the better after 40 years. But it wasn't. It wasn't any of that. They'd bought this bed at the Dorset Bed Centre, and it was supposed to lull them gently to sleep. Instead of which, it battered them round the bedroom. I think they've kept it. I think they gave the salesman a bonus. Roses to his cheeks, but no, they got £4,000 off the bed centre.
These were the electronic vibrating beds bought by Frederick and Jean Watts of Devon. The couple were awarded £4,000 damages after a court ruled they reacted to mobile phones and regularly went berserk in the night. The beds, not Mr. and Mrs. Watts. The beds were supposed to help occupants sleep like logs, which they did by hurling them into the fireplace. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear what clippings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is a story from The Express. A 32-year-old Swiss woman fainted from the cold when she attempted to steal a frozen chicken by stuffing it down her bra.
Steve.
Yes. Well, I was quite taken by Welsh butcher Tony Barry, who said, I haven't read the report into the E. coli outbreak, but it doesn't seem to have thrown up anything new. But that's my main thing is from Pilot magazine, which is from a magazine for pilots, apparently. And there's a little story in it that says... two members of the Lothian and Borders Traffic Police were out on the Berwickshire moors with a radar gun recently, happily engaged in apprehending speeding motorists, when their equipment suddenly locked up completely with an unexpected reading of well over 300 miles an hour. The mystery was explained seconds later as a low-flying Harrier hurtled over their heads. The boys in blue, upset at the damage to their radar gun, put in a complaint to the RAF, but were somewhat chastened when the RAF pointed out that the damage to police resources might well have been more severe. The Harrier's target seeker had been locked on to the enemy radar. And triggered an automatic retaliatory air-to-surface attack.
Alan.
I got one from the East Anglian Daily Times, Simon. It says, because of the East Anglian water shortage, an Ipswich production of the comedy Pyjama Tops will not now feature its best-known scene, in which nude girls swim about in a large glass tank. Instead, the girls will play badminton.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Once again, a tie. Francis and Andy, 16. Alan and Steve, 16 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the big issue sent in by Louis F. Faraway from Macclesfield.
A washing machine in Bulgaria started swearing at its owner. They'd barely plugged it in when it sneezed, explained Jankar Drar. Then, when I used it for the first time, it said bollocks and ow. Over the ensuing 2 days, a succession of expletives issued from the appliance, and eventually, convinced it was possessed by Satan, Miss Drar summoned the local priest. However, it was only when a plumber took the machine to pieces that it was discovered the voices in fact belonged to midget Anton Zadnowski. He had concealed himself inside the machine to burgle Miss Drar, only to find he couldn't get out again. It was a surprise to find him there, said the unfazed plumber. Normally, you just get naval fluff.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Parr and Francis Weed, Andy Kershaw and Steve Punt. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. The producer was Alad Evans.